The information presented is for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed are not necessarily the opinions of any Daikin company. This information should not be confused for accounting, legal, medical, or other professional advice. Please seek advice from a qualified professional for any specific questions.
Welcome to the Accelerated HVAC Success Program. My name is Ben Middleton. I'm the National Sales Training Manager for the Goodman, Amana, and Daikin brands. Today, we're joined here with Jim Steffi. He is the National Sales Trainer for the South Division. Jim, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on, Ben. I greatly appreciate it.
So, Jim, you know the first question I ask everybody, how in the world did you get into the HVAC industry?
Oh, it's a convoluted story. I was living in Arizona, and because I was working with builders, we could see the financial crisis coming. And I wanted to be in an industry that was recession-proof, or at least reasonably so. And I had an opportunity to go to work for one of the manufacturers, and I jumped on it. And ever since then, that's what I've done.
So you've worn a lot of different hats in the industry since you started in it. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the things that you've done?
Sure. So I started off, if we go back to the beginning of my career, I was in building materials and worked in building materials. And then I went into flooring, was a territory manager for a very large flooring company. And then I went into HVAC and was a territory manager. And then went to work for one of my dealers as the sales manager. And from there, I went to work for another distributor as a sales manager. And then went to work for an industrial thermal heating company as a general manager. And then didn't enjoy that as much as being the sales manager. So I went back to that. And now I'm here at Daikin. So,
well, and we're super excited to have you here on our team. And you've been, I hope you've been having fun for the last 6 months that you've been with the team.
I have. I've got to travel all over. I've got to meet so many great people and talk to so many different folks. And it really gives you that perspective of how successful the HVAC industry can be with the right training and planning. So
when you and I first talked, I definitely could sense your passion when it comes to training, and wanted to kind of pick apart, where does that passion stem from? Where does it come from? How did you utilize training in your previous roles that you had?
I had a great mentor when I first started off. I was 22 years old. I was running a store for a large chain. And his name is Dennis, and Dennis said, okay, if you're unhappy with the results you're getting from the people you have working for them, what did you do to make them better? And it kind of went back, well, I had them try harder. Okay, so they don't know what they're doing, but they're trying harder. Is that working for you? Not really. He goes, okay, well, why don't you build a training strategy? And I'm like, oh, that makes sense. And we started to look at, what it really did is we looked at the analytics. What were they good at? What were they bad at? How do we improve their skill set? What are they lacking? And it just took off from there. And then I went to work for the large building material company. I had 200 people working for me. And you started to look at how much personality traits matter in what jobs they do and how to train effectively. And, you know, when you take over a company that has 26% turnover, you have to do something different quickly because that you're just losing so much productivity, you're losing so much efficiencies, not being well trained, that kind of it's guided everything I've done since then. And then when I went to work as a territory manager, I understood that a lot of dealers mean well, but they don't really understand what business they're in. You know, the business that they're in is customer service. Okay, well, let's take a look at what you're doing well in the customer service side. Let's take a look where you could improve. And then most importantly, you hear this a lot. If you don't measure it, you can't manage it. And that's a huge part of being in business. And the first rule of business is stay in business. And to do that, you have to manage all the things that you don't think really matter. And that's where training is so critical and so important. You know, you find those weaknesses and make them strengths, and you take your deficiencies and make them efficiencies, you know, where you get that that ability to run one more call a day. You get that ability to make one more upgrade in a sale. You get that ability to take what could be a losing situation and turning into a win. And the only way that you get there is through training.
Mm. So in your experience, as you've worked with contractors, worked for contractors, everything you said sounds fine. What are the things that prevent a contractor from getting involved in training?
We've always done it this way. It is kind of a reoccurring phrase. Well, when we started, this is how we did it. Okay, that's nice. That doesn't work anymore. And if you use car analogies,
mm-hmm.
Well, before 1986, cars didn't have computers on them. You didn't have to hook it up to a diagnostic machine. Well, now they do. Well, you have to change what you're doing, and that's part of the process. You know, we did the R32 roadshows across the country, and this plays into that. Look, there are changes in the industry. What you did before, you know, R22 beer can cold doesn't work anymore. There's more to it, and you have to change and evolve as the times change and evolve.
So I get that kind of on the technical side, and I think our industry really does gravitate towards the technical training.
Mm-hmm.
What about the business acumen training, the sales training, the customer service training that you talked about?
Well, this is where most of the dealers get into trouble, is that they don't understand their business. They don't understand the overhead. They don't understand all of the complexities that go into running a business. Most of them work in their business, not on their business. And that's where it's a struggle for them. You have to show them, look, here are all of your key performance indicators, your KPIs. Here's what you need to be monitoring on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis. You have to look at the strategy that goes into improving all these areas. You know, you can sell 100 jobs, but if you sold 99 of them at a loss, you're out of business.
Hmm.
You know, if you don't manage the back end of the business, if you're not watching your costs, if you're not watching your labor rates, if you're not watching, you know, just simple things like ticket average and closing percentage and where you're spending your marketing dollars and the results you're getting, it really compounds and makes that business more of a struggle than it needs to be. But if you have a good, solid foundation to build on, then it's very easy to make those changes. You can look at your P&L, and if you're not looking at your P&L on a weekly or at least a monthly basis, you're behind the eight ball. And how many dealers have you and I talked to over the course of our careers that don't look at them nearly enough? You know, they look at them once a year or every 6 months or... And it's difficult for me to watch because that's your problem. You really have no idea what's going on in your business.
I think all that's fine and dandy. I think it was Stephen Covey that came up with kind of the four quadrants, and he talked about those things that are maybe not important, not urgent. Then you had things that were not important but urgent, and then you had things that were not urgent but important, and then you had important but urgent.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me it's human nature. You definitely work on those things that are important and urgent. Mm-hmm. You might work on the things that are not important and urgent just because they won't go away.
Mm-hmm.
But that important, not urgent category gets overlooked a lot of times. And that's where I kind of see the... In a lot of people's minds, as they're prioritizing, that's where that business training, that sales training, that skills development comes into play.
Well, absolutely. You know, when you look at how costs have increased, gas prices have increased, insurance prices have increased, both, you know, insurance on the company and insurance for employees. And we haven't seen the prices change enough to reflect being profitable with those changes. Those are costs to your business, and you have to put that into your bidding process in every aspect of your business that is related to sales or service. You have to account for those costs, and you don't see that enough. And it was interesting, we heard earlier today about being afraid of ripping our customers off.
Mm.
Well, I don't think you're ever ripping a customer off if they're paying for a service. You know, when you look at service-oriented business like HVAC, and you don't have parts on your truck, and you have to stop what you're doing from the repair and go to the parts house and pick up the part and go back out to the shop, you know, that's an hour and a half of work that you're not getting paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear things like, well, I charge them a $35 trip charge. okay, well, you only lost $200 on that particular venture. You know, you have to be prepared for what the day brings. And I think that we need to be more proactive rather than reactive as an industry. The phone rings and it's a crisis, and that's what we focus on this minute, and we lose sight of all the little things that make a profitable company.
Hmm. So if you kind of had to give your advice to a contractor that's mm-hmm. trying to put, we're at the beginning of the year right now,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to put together their training strategy for 2025, what would be your words of advice that you would share as a contractor's trying to map out that employee development, you know, kind of like you had to do, right? You had all these employees there, and you're trying to figure out what you were going to do with them.
Okay, so let's, you know, this goes back to understanding the numbers of your business.
Mm.
Okay, you look at the previous year's service technicians. How many calls did they run? How profitable were their calls? What were their strengths? What were their weaknesses? And when you start to look at their service calls, where did they struggle? What was the problem? And you start to uncover, okay, so service tech A was really good at X and Y, but it was terrible at Z, and the Z jobs all cost. And then you start to look, okay, well, how many times a day did we have to leave a job and go pick up a part? And when you start to look at the analytics of that, then you can build a training platform from the service technician. Okay, if he's strong at this but weak at this, then that's where you need to focus. You know, like my grandfather always told me, you can sharpen any part of the knife you want, but let's go ahead and sharpen the blade because that's where it'll do the most good. and really that's what you're trying to do is improve their skill set. You know, when you talk to most contractors and realize that they waste enough time to run a service call per day per tech, and you start to think about what that means, what would mean to their business over the course of 52 weeks, it really adds that impetus to focus on the training. And from the sales side, it's simpler. You look at how many sales calls they went on, how many sales calls they sold, how many jobs they sold, what was their closing percentage, what was their ticket average, how many jobs they financed, you know, what additional products were added on, you know, add-on sales on the tickets, and say, okay, so he sold X, sold Y, didn't sell any Z, didn't really finance any job, and he has a lower ticket average than the other salesperson. Mm-hmm. And you start to say, okay, well, here's what we need to focus on for the salespeople. And then when you get really deep into it, okay, how effective are the folks in the office at answering the phone and handling phone calls? How many calls do we take a day that we don't turn into an opportunity? You know, somebody will call up and say, well, I just want a price on X. Okay. And you give them that price, and then they call somebody else because they're price shopping. Okay, well, there's more to it. There's more training that needs to be done on that side as well. And again, once you start looking at the numbers, you start being able to relay that into what their actions are and what they need to improve on, it makes training a lot easier.
So I just was reading, there was a Voice of the Contractor survey that was done
mm-hmm.
from, and Hardy actually commissioned this study and had a third-party independent call a bunch of contractors and go through it. And it was interesting. There's a high demand when it comes to technical training
mm-hmm.
and sales training. When it came to business training, or even worse yet, bookkeeping training, understanding the numbers, or there was a pretty good pull for marketing as well. But the bookkeeping, understanding the numbers, operating a business profitably, those were at the bottom rung as far as training that contractors are looking for. What would you say to a contractor that has an opportunity to potentially attend, you know, one of our Profit on Purpose courses or the business strategies workshops that we have or the business planning boot camps that we have, when we're thinking about it, but then they're saying, you know what, we're too busy, we can't go. We're too slow. We don't have any money right now. We can't go.
Well, that's always the excuse. And,
right.
And when you see contractors that are hesitant mm-hmm. or even afraid of those business training courses, I don't think they fully understand it, what's in it for them. And when you look at most of the courses, it says, well, you can do this and you can do this. Okay, we'll cover this. All right, well, what does that translate to your business? And I think that that's kind of the missing component. When you sit down with a dealer that's reticent to do that type of training, that's where you point out, look, if you get better at this, this is what it means to your company. If you get better at this, this is what it means for your company. If you start managing your KPIs, you know, again, those key performance indicators, on a much stronger basis, look at how much stronger your company is. You're managing your costs. You're understanding what your profit per man hour per day is. You're starting to understand exactly what goes into running the business successfully. And what they really need is somebody to help them along the way. You know, there has to be somebody to be there for them. It's not just that they went to class. It's someone that will help them implement this. And I think that's where it gets lost. They come out of a class with, oh, that sounded really great. And then 3 days later, the phone has rang three times and they're on a completely different path and they forget it all. And that's where having someone be able to follow up with you, being able to do some of the things to help you implement those things. That's why your territory sales manager is so important if you're a business owner, someone that's going to help you do these things. So
what about the components maybe not related to the equipment in particular, but understanding skills like how to properly do a heating and cooling load, duct design, airflow, those types of things?
Oh, we're going to get into that. Okay, fair enough. You know, this is why at times, as much as I'm a very states' right advocate, I think that there has to be a national code. You know the story that I tell about load calcs. Mm-hmm. One of the things that, you know, I'm in the South, and I can't tell you the number of times that you'll see a 5-ton package unit on a mobile home. You know, no, more air doesn't help. You you know, that's not what's important. When you see something that's as important as a load calc, and I have said this in every R32 roadshow that I've talked about, I said, what if the guy that put the system on was an idiot? What if he didn't know how to do a load calculation properly? How much does that affect the system? You know, when we talk about the first federal tax credit from 2007 to 2010, you know, the energy companies, like, why aren't we saving more energy? There was a tax credit. You got $1,500 to put a 16-SEER piece of equipment on. But energy usage didn't go down as they thought. Well, okay, if you put a unit on that's too large and it's short cycles, it's using more energy. I mean, that's why inverters going forward are so much more important, because they run at low speeds all the time. And when you look at the locking rotor amp draw on a compressor and you see, wow, it takes just as much energy to start it once as it does to run it for 4 hours. Mm. Okay, and then you looked at duct sizing, and you look at all of the things that go into a load calculation. You look at the way, you know, the orientation of the house, and you look at the insulation values to make sure that the air conditioner runs properly. You don't want a unit that short cycles. You don't want a unit that can't provide air across the house. And then when you get into the duct design, that's the number of great duct systems I've seen in the course of my life is small. You know, and I wish the industry would go to all ductless, just put cassette heads in every room and be done with it. Because when you talk about where houses lose energy and where they lose efficiencies, you can relate a lot of it back to ductwork. Hmm.
So there may be some people that are listening to us, you know, talk back and forth here, and they're thinking, yeah, you know, that's all fine and dandy. I get it, but you know, if I invest in my people, they might leave me.
Oh, yeah. Or you don't invest in them and they stay.
Right.
Which is the flip side of that. How often have we seen in our careers where people have left jobs because there were more opportunities someplace else? Mm-hmm. And what you find is that the places that train more, that train better, that train effectively, you see people gravitate to them. They want to work at places that are going to expand their knowledge. Most people have an inherent desire to be better at their job. And places that don't provide any training, that they become stagnated, and it basically becomes churn in, churn out. You have to train consistently, because look at how many changes we've had just in the last 5 years and how many more are possibly coming. Do you want to be the company known for having excellent employees because you invest in the training? Or do you want to be the company known that, no, times got a little hard, we cut training? And then we get into the wishful thinking strategy. Well, I'm not going to train them. We're just going to get better this year. Well, those two things are diametrically opposed. Right?
No, it reminds me of the story of the two hikers in the woods, and they see a bear, and the one hiker starts running. The other hiker decides to take his hiking boots off and stop and put on his tennis shoes, and the other hiker says, "What are you doing?" Says, "I don't need to outrun the bear. I just need to outrun you." And so when I think of our industry, mm-hmm. you know, really in business, the whole entire goal is I just got to be better than the rest of my competitors in the marketplace. And the only way you can do that is by leveling up the expertise of the people that you have on your team.
Well, absolutely. In our industry, how many places do we see they recycle techs and recycle salespeople? Well, he worked for me before and he left because company X offered him 15 cents or 25 cents yeah. more an hour. And then he comes back. Well, what did he learn while he was over there? Well, they didn't train him either. Now he's back with you. What did you get? If you're not constantly expanding their skill set, if you're not constantly improving him, improving your employees, what are you doing? How do you grow your business without growth of your employees?
Well, I think there's some really great things that are in the industry. You've got companies like NCI that mm-hmm. will actually certify a technician. Mm-hmm. And so they can, you know, they get that badge, so to speak. You've got Nate. Mm-hmm. And I see many technicians walking around proudly with the number of patches that they have on their sleeves. You've got now this skilled energy contractor designation mm-hmm. For people that are going through training. So I don't know if all of those designations and badges really help you get one more sale. But I do know that the techs that are being invested in and have all of those designations have far more loyalty to the organization that was willing to invest in them to help them get there versus the techs that don't.
Well, absolutely. And this is one of the things that when I talk to people about selling at the kitchen table, mm-hmm. none of your competitors are going to say, "Hey, we're not going to do a very good job. We're probably not going to charge the system correctly. We know, you know, we didn't do a load calculation." No, everybody says that they're going to be the best. Mm-hmm. How do you prove that you're the best? Well, having those, the NCI designation, the NATE designation, the energy, you know, the Energy Star qualifications,
yeah.
these are things that signify that, yes, we invested in the training. We are the best at what we do, and we can prove it at the kitchen table.
So what words of wisdom would you have for a contractor listening to this right now as they're thinking about we're coming into training season that's right around the corner here? What words of advice would you share?
It's multifaceted. Yeah. So when you look at what each individual, and you can't make a single, I can't make a single blanket statement. You have to look at your business right now. Where are you succeeding? Where are you falling short? Okay, well, I'm going to train on the falling short side, but I'm still going to train where I'm succeeding because we can always get better. There are no flawless outcomes every time. And that's where I'd start. Where does your business need help? If you need help on the technical side, okay, you want to be more efficient where you can get out to the job. You can develop a solid workflow. You can get to repairs faster. You have more parts on your truck. Great. Then that's a good start, but you have to look at your company as a whole. It's not just, it's the sum of all the parts. So if everything isn't operating optimally, then make sure that everything's operating optimally and make sure that the people that need training get it and the people that need to take it to the next level get that as well. You have to focus on what your company needs.
Well, one final follow-up question to that I'm going to ask. Is what would you say to the owner? Great, they put together a training plan for all of their people. Mm-hmm. What should they do personally for themselves?
So they put together a training plan. Great. And it looks great on paper. How are you going to follow up? What are you going to do to follow up? Now, what are you going to do to improve your skill set? You know, what business plan did you put in place for this year? Do you have a marketing plan for this year? Do you have a business strategy? Are you ready to go? Because you can do all of those great things and you can still have a business that struggles a little bit because it starts with you. You have to be working on the business, not in the business. And it starts with having a solid plan. You've got your training plan together. Great. Do you have your marketing plan? Do you have your profit goals for this year? Do you have your marketing strategy? All the things that are necessary to be a successful business. And that's what I would tell the owners that are watching.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for coming here. And for all of you that are out there, if you liked this episode, please go ahead, hit that like button. Also, make sure you hit the follow button so you can be informed of all of the upcoming episodes that we have. Jim, thank you so much for joining us.
Ben, thank you, sir.